If you enjoyed this podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you subscribed and left me a review. If you would like to discuss working with me to achieve your job search or career goals, my calendar link is in the show notes. Greetings. How's it going? Hello. Hi there. Hey, today we're going to talk about how to make the right decision when changing employers. We could probably have called this how not to jump out of the frying pan into the fire. But we want to be thoughtful about this process. So that's what we're going to talk about today in two different kind of ways. But first, I want to remind you that there is a link in the show notes. If you would like to work with me and discuss working one-on-one, then you want to schedule a consult. That's a 45-minute opportunity for you to tell me what's going on with you and what your goals are. And I diagnose where your problems might be or where your where the best use of your time is to focus your time and energy to move yourself forward with whatever it is that you're dealing with, whether it's a job search or trying to get a promotion or success in your current role, whatever that may be. If you don't want to check the show notes, you can also go to my website, exclusivecareercoaching.com, and there's a box there where you can sign up for a consult directly on the website. All right, so let's talk about how to increase your chance of choosing an employer that's going to be a good fit for you. And as I said, I want to break this down into two areas. First of all, we're going to talk about what qualities or characteristics you might want to consider and how I work with my clients on making that decision and prioritizing their what I call non-negotiables. And then secondly, we're going to talk about what you can do to assess the employer throughout the process to make sure that you are asking the right questions, looking in the right places, checking in the right drawers, if you will, to get the answers that you need. In terms of what you're looking for, the first thing I want to say very clearly is that there are no right or wrong answers here. It's what's important to you. And I like to separate these out from non-negotiables, meaning I will not go to work somewhere that doesn't possess these top things. And you have to be very selective about what those are, because obviously the more you add to the list, the less likely it is that a company is going to have all of them. So it's really an exercise in figuring out what can I not live without and what's the icing on the cake. The other ones I call gee, wouldn't it be nice, right? And the story that I like to tell when I illustrate this is back when I worked at a university in Georgia and I was applying for positions all over the U.S., I had spent a decade at the university at Columbus State University working in a literal fallout shelter. So we were in the lower level of the student union building and it was those brick, you know, that really thick brick wall to keep us safe from whatever horrible thing was going to come our way, but we didn't have any windows and we did not, we could not hear a terrible storm outside. It was so insulated with these big bricks. And so one of my gee, wouldn't it be nice is when I was looking all over the U.S. for my next position is sure would like windows. And I can remember when I went and interviewed at Truman where I ended up, I was struck by rather than being in a student union or something like that, our office was freestanding. We had half the building and the health center had the other half. And so you walked directly into our office. And so we had these beautiful windows. I had a big window in my office. Every room pretty much had windows. And it was such a delightful thing. But it wasn't a non-negotiable. What was a non-negotiable for me was I had kind of, Columbus State at the time was very much a commuter college, and there wasn't a lot of respect or focus on the career center. So I wanted to go somewhere where the career center was highly valued and was really a centerpiece for the university. In fact, it really wasn't when I got there, but there was the potential. And my boss told me that I had turned it in to a showpiece for the university before I left. But that was very much on my mind, is that potential there? Is there interest in the career center and in what it does? Or are we some sort of afterthought? And that was a non-negotiable for me. So here are some things that might be non-negotiables for you or might be important. They might be those gee, wouldn't it be nices. But let me go over some of these. This is not an exhaustive list. And then I'm going to talk to you about how you sort through this list. So it could be a particular industry. So you could have a focus on working in consumer product goods or healthcare or education. It could be a particular product or service that either you've worked with in the past. This is your area of expertise. It's a maybe I have clients who want to work for a company because they love their products. They are passionate about whatever it is they make or the service that they provide. And it could also be something that you just have a lot of respect for. So maybe for whatever reason you haven't interacted with the product. Maybe it's a, business to business, B2B product, but you have a great deal of respect for it. Another one is a certain aspect of their vision or mission statement. And of course, there's sometimes a big difference between what's written on the wall and the pretty print and what happens in the company. So obviously, if something about their mission or their vision is important to you, you want to see, are they actualizing that? Is that actually part of the culture, or is it just, again, pretty words on the wall? You might be concerned with whether it is a for-profit or nonprofit organization. So the status of the company may be important to you. You may be interested in the revenue of the company. And I find this is particularly useful for people who are in, say, accounting, and they want to be maybe the CFO of the company, and they're ready to move up to the next level, if you will, of revenue for a company, sort of more responsibility and all that comes with that. Could be number of employees. I see this one oftentimes with folks in HR. They want to manage or be in HR for a slightly larger company. There may be some aspect of the organization's culture that is interesting to you, that is important to you. Geographic location of the company or where you would work. So, of course, this is going to be relevant if you are an in-office or hybrid person. So, are you, do you need to be in close physical proximity to the company or not? And then also commute distance. So I ran into this a lot, I think more than anything with folks who lived in Toronto. I've never been to Toronto, but apparently it's very big. And people would tell me, well, I live in Toronto and the job's in Toronto, but I have a an hour commute either way. So just because it's, in the same city as you, the commute may still be untenable. So again, that's appropriate for those who either have the hybrid or in-office arrangement. I think another one that's important is if it is a hybrid, you want to find out what the breakdown is expected to be, and you want to get a very straight answer. I'm still fascinated by one of my clients who told me that they had applied to a job and it advertised it being hybrid, and come to find out it was 4.5 days a week in the office, and you didn't have to be in the office on Friday afternoons. How that is hybrid, I do not understand, but there it is. Another one could be amount of travel required. So whether that's you wanting to limit travel or whether you love travel and want to make sure there's enough of it, and it could also be a question of where am I going to Europe frequently, or am I going to, little town USA, and whatever's important to you. The company's reputation is often one that's important to people, and it can be the reputation in the community. It could be the reputation in their industry in any number of ways. But what about that reputation is important to you? What are you looking for? You want to get specific about that. The company's position in their industry as well. Are they the top provider of whatever it is they make? Are they the leading, all I've noticed after doing this for so many years. Descriptions of companies, like you go to their websites, it's always we're the leading, or we're a leading, blah blah blah. Nobody's ever like we're not, we're the following. I don't know what the option, what the opposite is, because I never see it. But you want to find out, perhaps are they the number one provider? Are they the number two provider, and they're trying harder because they want to be number one? Like has their position slipped? That's another one I think you want to look at. Did they used to be number one and now they're number four? Well, what's going on? The company's phase. So for some of the folks that I work with, it's really important. They want to work specifically with a startup. They want to work with, a company that is pre-IPO or in a growth phase of some sort. So they have a really strong sense. It's really important to them that the company be in a certain phase. You may look for a certain quality in your direct supervisor, and that could run the gambit. So again, it's not enough to say, what's most important to me and non-negotiable is my supervisor. No, that doesn't tell me anything. What is it about your supervisor? What do you need to see in him or her if this is a non-negotiable of yours? The number and possibly the level of the people that you would directly supervise. So, how many? So, that's often an important one for folks who maybe they've supervised one or two people and they're ready to move up to the next level. And also, maybe with that, they want to supervise a higher level of person. You may care about your budget and the staffing relative to what you're expected to do. So specifically as you get to that director level and above, what are they asking you to do? And are they showing support for that based on the staff you have and the budget you have? One of the most memorable things that I learned in my graduate school that really kind of hit me between the eyes was that, and this of course was specific to higher education because of the program that I was in, or government, I should say, and higher education too, was that organizations place value where they place their money. And it does absolutely apply to for-profit and even not-for-profit. Really anybody, they can say this is really X is really important to us, but if they're not funding and putting people into X, then they don't really value it. They're giving lip service to it. Also, salary and bonus potential, now that's a big one for a lot of people. They have they have a certain salary now and they want to be at a certain level going forward. Maybe it's really important to you that a certain amount of that at least be in the salary as opposed to bonus, which is not guaranteed. Benefits. So there may be something specific. Again, just saying it has to have benefits. Well, any company of any size has to have some kind of benefits, but are they any good? What is, maybe you have a chronic condition, or someone in your family that would be under this policy has a chronic condition, and maybe it's really important to you that you have coverage for a certain specialist or treatment or something like that. It's really important to me to have some kind of wellness benefits. Maybe there's something specific that you're looking for there. Another one is PTO. That's a pretty straightforward one. Maybe you want more PTO than you have now, and you want to find out if that's a possibility. The expectation for the actual work day and work week, and as opposed to maybe what's printed in the job position, right, in the description. How much do people actually work? And are they working weekends? Are they working evenings? No right or wrong here, but does that match with your needs? Is that a non-negotiable for you? Do you perhaps want to look for a company that has a 4-day work week? Is that really important to you? And for some people, that could be a non-negotiable. Opportunity for advancement is a pretty important one for many people. Is there a clear career ladder, or is it much more ambiguous than that? Are you seeing evidence that people are being brought in at the mid-level and above from outside the organization, or does there seem to be a strong policy of promotion from within? What about access or opportunity for training and professional development? So what I mean by that is maybe they offer it. I love it when companies have a really well-defined learning and development function within the company. For other companies, it may be just allowing you to go outside to conferences, trainings, that kind of thing. But what I've also seen is that sometimes there's availability, but you don't have access to it, meaning that your work schedule, your travel schedule, whatever it is such that it's not possible for you to take advantage of what's right in front of you. I've run into folks who, the company supports continuing formal education, say a graduate degree, but yet their work schedule and particularly a travel schedule is such that they couldn't figure out how to actually take advantage of that resource on a practical basis. So again, not an exhaustive list, but I wanted to get your mind thinking. So the next step would be to identify 4 to 5 of those that are non-negotiables. It doesn't mean you have to have four. There could be one thing on that list and you're like, I don't care about anything else, but this thing is so important to me that it's front and center in my mind. But 4 to 5 is a good number, and you may even want to weight them. There may be one or two that are even more non-negotiable, if that's a thing, than the others. And you're like, okay, like all of these are important, but I gotta see these things. So really sussing out what are those, think about it as like you're trying to make an ice cream sundae. What are the items? What are those things that are the ice cream in this sundae versus what are the things that are the whipped topping, the cherry, the nuts, that kind of thing? The idea and the reason that I want you to do this is to avoid shiny object syndrome. And I think I've told this story before, but I think it applies, and it has to do with when I was in a former relationship. We were buying a house. We were moving back to Tallahassee. And we had narrowed it down to two houses, one that was in Tallahassee and one that was down in Crawfordville, which is 30 minutes down the road. And I had created this spreadsheet of the things that we had decided before we'd ever start the process of what was most important to us, our non-negotiables, and we had weighted those as well. And what it came down to when we looked at the two houses was the one in Crawfordville scored a whole lot higher because it had those non-negotiables. There were some shiny objects at the house in Tallahassee. There was this really cool wine bar because I kind of have a thing for wine bars, and there was a whole setup, and I really liked that. And they had these cool, like, lights. This was a thing back, I don't know, 10 years ago, where you'd have like lights in your tray ceiling or whatever. And that was cool. And there was some cool lighting in the bathroom, but it didn't have some of my non-negotiables. Like the laundry room was out in the garage on a pedestal that didn't have a railing around it. And I could just see myself backing up with a load of laundry out of the dryer and falling 5 feet down. So a little concerned about that. No fenced in backyard, and we had a dog, so that was a problem. So shiny object syndrome, what that might look like at a company could be, oh, they have a really fantastic child care center. And you could get really excited about that, except you maybe are past your child rearing age and don't need child care or don't plan to have children, right? So you have to make sure that these things are important to you and not lose sight of what is important to you because you look at the shiny objects. So let's next talk about how you assess these things. And it's going to, of course, depend on what your things are, but I want to give you a couple of buckets. So one is if you're researching something about the company, and this can fall into qualitative and quantitative, right? So qualitative could be culture related things, employee things to do with what it's like to work there. Let's call it that. Versus quantitative would be some of those numbers we talked about, size of the company, revenue, product, position in the market, those kind of things. For the qualitative, you really can't depend on the company's website. They're going to have a bunch of shiny employees on there and they're all going to be thrilled to work there, and that's not going to help you. Glassdoor.com is still my favorite. There are other sites out there that give employees or past and former employees the opportunity to evaluate a company, but Glassdoor is still my favorite. And then also news releases. Now, not press releases coming from the company, but news releases from maybe their industry publications, the city publication, business journals, those kind of things. For the quantitative information, there's a really good site that I like, and you have to access it at a public library. This is not something you're going to want to purchase. It's actually a sales tool that a lot of salespeople use, and it's called Data Axle. So you could call your public library, and it used to be called Reference USA. So if any of you have any familiarity with that, it's now called Data Axle. And it is a great source for getting information about an organization, but also you can search companies and say, hey, these are the criteria. I'm looking for companies that have these things, and it'll show it up. It'll also show you like key people in the company, all the things, revenue, all that. Other sources, I like Wikipedia, of course. You can't go wrong there. And if they're publicly traded, you've got sites like Dun and Bradstreet, Standard and Poor's. And also, and I didn't know about this one until I was researching for this one, but the SEC.gov's site has a database called EDGAR. It's all caps, so I assume it's an acronym, EDGAR, EDGAR. So some of the information that's most important to you may not be available until you get into the interview process, right? So you're not going to know something about the direct supervisor, the team environment, culture, the culture within the culture, right? So the culture within the department that you want to work in. But I think it's still important to identify it if as a non-negotiable, if in fact it is, because that keeps it on your radar screen. And it's not that you can do an upfront evaluation about it and decide whether or not you want to, even apply there, but you definitely want to check that out as you are going through the interview process. So to be clear, based on what your non-negotiables are, some of these things might disqualify a company before you would ever even apply for it. Like, I don't want to work there for these reasons. Others are, it's going to happen during the interview process. You're going to be able to ascertain whether this company is a good fit for you. Next, let's talk about touch points throughout the hiring process where you can get the information that you need. So one thing I want to mention is paying attention to how you are treated, how you are interacted with throughout the hiring process. Are you getting upbeat and friendly, prompt responses, People are nice to you. People seem to be nice to one another. Things are happening in a reasonable time frame. People are on time for things like interviews, that kind of thing. Are they staying in regular contact with you, or are they, dropping off the face of the earth periodically and then showing back up 2 months later? Like, all of that, I think, is very indicative. Like, the way I like to think of it is, they are courting you right now. They are dating you. And once you decide to get married to them and get on board and take the job, it's not like they're going to be nicer to you then. It probably isn't going to be. It might be, but I'd be a little concerned about that. If this is what I'm getting in the dating phase when they're trying to court me and this is how they're treating me, then what does this say about how they might treat me once they've got me? You also want to pay attention to how your interactions are with the team members you would be working with. Do they include you? Now, I'm not saying they invite you out for their happy hour before you've gotten the job, but I'm saying, what's the dynamic like when you have an opportunity to meet with a team, whether you will be a member of that team or the person to whom that team reports? Are they inclusive and friendly and welcoming, or is it like, you're on one side of the table and they're on the other side table and they feel a little bit standoffish and maybe even a little bit, I don't know, resistant? And I really want you to trust your gut on that one, right? So everything else could be running smooth as clockwork, but if you get in the room with the team and there is some funky stuff going on, I really want you to pay attention to that. During the interview process, you want to ask questions that will get to things like opportunities for advancement. Is there career pathing in that company, career laddering? Are they able to very clearly state, here's what's going to happen or here's what can happen? What about training and professional development, whether it is provided in-house or you have access to it outside? Externally, what does that look like? Compensation and benefits, that's what you're going to ask the HR person. And if you have specific, we talked about this a moment ago, if one of your non-negotiables is something about the benefits, then be sure and ask a specific question to get at that. Expectations for the role. You want to pay attention at this point as you're asking these questions in the interview, whether you are getting direct, honest responses, like the face is open, there's no darting of the eyes. It doesn't seem like they're like nervous to answer you, or are you feeling like there's something funky going on? They're hedging their answers a little bit. You can also ask about company culture, and we talked about using something like Glassdoor for this. You can ask the employees. What I would encourage you to do is ask multiple employees separate from one another, right? Like, not just in a group of all the team members and have them say, what's it like? You are going to get a positive company response there. What I would be looking for is I would ask my direct supervisor. I would ask a direct report, maybe one. I would ask someone who deals with that department, and I want to hear similar answers. Doesn't sound like they all studied each other's answers, but if I'm hearing that it sounds like completely different departments and completely different cultures from each of these people, then that's a red flag for me. So let's talk about those red flags. Anything that comes up within the process, it doesn't mean that this is not the job for you and you shouldn't accept it. What it does mean is that you've got some work to do to drill down and find the truth, if you can. And that's especially important. Obviously, it's important for everybody, but if you're not unhappy where you're at, you don't want to jump out of a decent situation. Maybe you feel, you're ready for a new challenge, or you feel like you're underpaid or undervalued, but overall, you like your people you work with, you like your boss. You don't want to leave that to go into a situation that is fraught with challenges. Challenges that you don't want to take on. Let me say that. We all, different people like different kinds of challenges, but maybe dealing with a culture situation that you, maybe that's just not something you want to deal with. So you want to do your homework and really make sure that this feels like the right opportunity for you. So ultimately, get the facts, but also check the gut, because in my experience, whenever I don't listen to my gut, that's when I get into problems. So ultimately, finding the right employer for you involves a combination of self-knowledge, so knowing what's most important to you, doing your homework, and that can be research on websites and publications and all of that, but also the research that you do with the team, current, former employers, maybe your employees, maybe you're going to reach out via LinkedIn. It can also be self-reflection. So as you start to gather this information, how is it setting with you? How are you feeling about what you're learning? And your intuition, right? So again, checking your gut. You want to trust your instincts. Carefully consider how this employer aligns with your values, your goals, and your preferences. Again, no right or wrong, but if you do that, you're much more likely to make an informed decision that's going to be right for you. So I hope this has been helpful, and I will see you next week. Take care. Greetings, Lisa Edwards here, CEO of Exclusive Career Coaching and host of the Exclusive Career Coach Podcast. Ready for some great career management content? Then let's dig in.